You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Gilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Joined this week by three Chris's, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and XV. Yeah.
Hello.
Anyway, today it is Fanboy Versus Spoilers. We have in just a metric crap ton of comics that came out this week. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll notice that apparently DC hates my wallet because they took all of my money.
Marvel wasn't too bad. It was DC that the fingers were pointed at.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is 2 weeks ago, we had virtually nothing come out. And then this week, everything. Green Lantern, Return of Bruce Wayne, Emerald Dawn, Booster for me. I mean, just a ton of other stuff.
Four Batman Road Home one-shots.
Yep. Four, well, all at one time.
All the Avengers books didn't come out this week like it did that one week, thank God.
Yeah. Yes.
And then McFeely practically forced me to go back and buy episode 1 and 2 of Taskmaster.
Well,
which turned out to be awesome, and I appreciate that, but
doing you a service.
Yeah, you know, that was a favor. So, news-wise, we don't care.
Well, I did find one thing. Incredible Hulk coming back to television.
That's great.
Oh, yes, there is that.
Yeah. Yay.
That's about all there is to say.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
To talk about. But if he does come back to television, you know, we got to have the music where he's, like, walking down the road, right?
Oh, yeah. Do we get the scene where he's, like, looking at his own grave every episode, too? Or?
I hope so.
You know? That would be...
It makes you wonder, though, I mean, what way they're planning to try and work that if he's going to be in the Avengers film.
Does Marvel care?
Oh, yes, I think they really do care about the presentation of their characters. You just have to look at, to quote something we won't be talking about this week, we'll be talking about it next week, though, when it airs, is the new Avengers cartoon is screaming movie right now.
Yeah, but they can do that with the animated. I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
Well, I would think that, you know, if it's going to be live action, they'd probably be trying even harder.
Mm. Or are they just doing this?
It's not going to have the same actor as
Mark Ruffalo. No,
It just makes you scratch your head a little bit. It's like with Wonder Woman, like over at DC, it really just feels like they've thrown their hands up and given up on a film and just settled for TV instead.
Well, I think that's going to work, though. I mean, if they're trying to do something to replace Smallville, you know, as far as that goes, I hate it.
Jay, like, admit it, you've been watching Smallville.
I have been watching Smallville.
You poor sick fool.
Friday, I'm at work. I'm like halfway through the day almost. And I go, ooh, Smallville's on tonight. What the fuck is wrong with me? Jeez. Yeah. I'm liking this show. I don't know
why. Jay, I don't think I can be your friend anymore.
God.
But are you liking the show or are you just watching the show?
I'm actually liking it. I mean, and Triplett will attest to this. What have I done the last 2 weeks after the show?
Talk about it.
I've gotten online to talk to you about the show because I know you watch it.
Oh, dear.
I'm like, what is wrong? You know what it is?
Hate Superman. That's
I hate Superman, but I love the other characters, and that's I think the thing. I mean, there's a couple of things that I like about it. I'm going to digress for just a second, but. I mean, for one, it's probably one of the best depictions of Lois Lane. Like, this is a Lois Lane that I can get behind. She's strong, she's independent, she carries her own. That's what I like to see out of a female character.
Is she as good as Kate Bosworth?
Yes.
Other characters in the show as well. my favorite part of, like, the last episode was Ollie sitting there talking to the reporters, and he goes off on this, like, liberal agenda tirade, which was just excellent. I'm like, finally, this character is starting to take shape. But anyway, I don't know why. Part of it is, I've been watching reality television for the last few years. And to finally get back into, I know, and to finally get back into something that's like serialized drama that's actually interesting, that's not even like Law and Order, which is basically one episode to the next with no real connection between them, which is the other thing that we end up watching. So to have like an actual series where I'm like, ooh, what's going to happen next is kind of fun. Even if it is Superman. But I don't care about Clark, really. So,
well, that's anyway. Something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like the other characters.
That's how you get live with yourself. That's how you sleep at night.
Right. I can just say that I hate Superman, and I like the other characters. So, anyway. Okay, so comics. Lots of comics, obviously, happened this week.
Yeah.
Triplet, we will let you go first. Okay. And unleash what you have upon us.
Well, I guess I need to save the Batman stuff for the end, right?
Thank you. Yes, and yeah. I'm going to go ahead and preface all of our reviews in that there's a ton of stuff that happened this week, little story reveals, small items, and we're just going to warn you now. If you haven't read the stuff that came out this week, big spoilers, because we're going to dig into some few things. I want to talk about some theories that I have, so... just be prepared that there's going to be a lot of reveals in this. We're just going to say spoilers up front, and then listen at your own peril. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, then, I guess if we're going to leave Batman for the end, then all I really got to talk about is Amazing Spider-Man, because like, the two books that I read other than that were Return of Bruce Wayne and The Road Home, Batman and Robin.
Well, go ahead and talk about that. You can talk about that, too.
Kind of bowls a little bit, don't it? Well, it doesn't tell you anything about Return of Bruce Wayne, but you know the ending, you know,
mm-hmm.
of the book. The ending of the book pretty much, you know, reveals to you that hey, something's already happened, even though the last issue of Return hasn't happened yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it obviously is taking place after the Return of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Since
I mean, so what's going on? Is it just because like Return is just so behind schedule wise, or is it? Was it planned?
I believe these... Do you know what? No, I'm actually really not sure.
Because, like, Return's been, like, really delayed, hasn't it? I mean, like,
it feels behind.
It should have ended months ago, shouldn't it? I mean, if it was going monthly.
I mean, these were supposed to be... These one-shots, we got four of them this week. We got Batman and Robin, Red Robin, The Outsiders, and Batgirl. Now, two of those... I don't know which two offhand. Two of those were supposed to be out last week, but they didn't come out. And I assumed that that was because they were holding them back until at least Return of Bruce Wayne number 5 came out, which also came out this week. It was a big week for the Bat buyers this week.
Yeah, it was the big week to get you to buy books and have to buy books. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't really seem to have been... I mean, I presume it must be safe to read before Return of Bruce Wayne number 6, but it's set after it.
Yeah, it's set
if I've understood, I didn't read. I didn't have time to read these one shots either. But as I understand it, these are all narrated by Bruce
mm-hmm.
at a point in time after he has already returned.
Yep, that's it. Pretty much.
Tell me.
Well,
more.
Batman and Robin. I didn't read Red Robin, and I didn't read Batgirl. And I think the other one's Outsiders. I haven't read those. I only got around to reading Batman and Robin. I figured that was the first one, why I read it. You know, I assume that's the order of them. But basically, it's for the most part of the story, it's pretty much following Dick and Damian, just sort of, you know, being Batman and Robin, you know, just same as usual. But like you said, there is someone that's narrating it. And as the story's going, we're not too sure who it is, and it appears that somebody's watching him, and it almost makes you think that maybe this is like some villain or something. Like maybe somebody's watching Batman and learning his moves because he's preparing to take him down or something. And we don't know who this mysterious person is.
Well, I think there's even like a hint that it. I mean, obviously they're watching them and they know about them. My first thought, like right off the bat, was that it was Jason.
Yeah, you could see that. I mean, I didn't really... I kind of assumed that, yeah, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne, you know, just because of the name of the book, it's The Road Home. But I thought, well, you know, should he already be back? Didn't The Return of Bruce Wayne number 5 just come out? You know?
The schedule is completely worked. I mean, these one-shots were supposed to come out this month in lieu of the actual issues of these books this month.
Yeah.
And yet, Outsiders was out this week, and Batman and Robin is out next week.
Yeah. And so as it's going, though, it also changes narrators, too, because Bruce is narrating it, but there's also Vicki Vale returns, mm-hmm. and she's narrating it. And I don't know, I can't remember if she's been back. I don't remember if she's been in Batman and Robin. See, I've kind of fallen off the horse in Detective. I've not read the last couple of issues, and the regular Batman book I'm behind on, too, so I'm not sure if maybe she's been back. Because, you know, my focus has been on the Batman and Robin and the return of Bruce Wayne. So maybe she's already been back, but this is the first I've seen of her. The whole story's kind of centered around she's going to write a story about Bruce Wayne being Batman. And she's trying to find out. She's been watching him for weeks. So, like, as you've got Bruce watching Damian and Dick, you know, being Batman and Robin, she's been watching Dick and Damian and assuming that that is Bruce. So it's kind of neat because, you know, she's writing this story and she's going to, you know, she's even said at one point in the story she got like a tracer, like Dick Grayson put a tracer on her. So I'm assuming that she's been in the book before this issue because this issue, the tracer wasn't placed on her. So maybe she was in like the regular Batman book or Detective or something.
It may have happened in one of the other one-shots. Again, as I understand it, use that phrase again, each of these one-shots does lead into the next.
Yeah, and see, I don't know if I've read it out of order or something, but so there's a tracer on her, and she actually finds the tracer, and she talks into it, and she says, "Bruce, I know you can hear me. If we don't talk by noon tomorrow, the truth will make the final edition of Sundown." And then it shows in the Batcave, and you know, Alfred and you gets the message. She's Alfred's you know, doing Alfred stuff in the Batcave. I guess he's cleaning it or something. I don't know. But as the issue goes on, you know, Damian and Dick are, you know, trying to take down these bad guys. They've tracked them down to this warehouse, and they actually, while they're fighting them, the lights get turned out, and Bruce runs in, and he, I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I don't know if he's helping them or if he's trying to get something from these guys that's in the warehouse, these bad guys that, you know, Dick and Damian are tracking down, but he they never see him. Like, they see somebody in the commotion, but they never see him because he's got this suit on that, you know, he doesn't look anything like a person. He looks like a robot suit or something. I don't know what it is. But what happens is that Vicki does get a meeting with Bruce, but it's not the Bruce that she wanted to meet. And again, this is, if you guys haven't been reading Batman for God, the last couple of years, Tommy Elliott, I think it was his name, the dude that was Hush. Yeah, is that his name? Yeah. He went through some changes at some point where he actually got his face restructured so that he looks just like Bruce Wayne. He had this big plan where he was going to, since Bruce is dead, to pretend to be Bruce Wayne. You know, you claim his you know, his fortunes and everything, and you kind of, you know, screw over the Bat family and all that stuff. But, you know, Catwoman and can't remember who else, you know, wound up stopping him and, you know, putting an end to him. And so he's been basically locked up by Dick Grayson and Damian and Alfred and just kind of like, you know, paraded out whenever the world just needs to know that, you know, Bruce Wayne's still alive and know that, you know, he's
oh, that's what they did with him. Okay.
Yeah, so he,
man,
he'll,
I'm perfectly
like,
happy just reading the Morrison stuff right now.
Yeah. So, like, you know, that's why the world hasn't been like, you know, oh, we haven't seen Bruce Wayne in, like, you know, a year. Is he dead? No, they, like, bring him out, and they basically have him controlled. They basically tell him that, hey, we need you to be Bruce, but we're not going to let you go. And they're, like, watching him and everything. So they're you know, making it so that he has to make these appointments. So he gets his – he does meet with Vicki Vale. And he pretty much convinces Vicki that he's not Batman, but she knows that he's not Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I would have thought Vicki Vale could have told.
She figures it out, and she figures that, yeah, that's got to be Dick Grayson that's now Batman. And the issue pretty much ends, her part of the story pretty much ends with, so the question is, she basically kisses him, and this is how she knows. She says, "I've looked into Bruce's eyes for hours at a time I have been intimate with him. Ooh. The man I kissed tonight was not Bruce Wayne. So the question becomes, where is the real Bruce Wayne?" which leads to the next page where we find out the mysterious guy that's been watching them is Bruce, and he's been back all along, and he's working with Tim Drake, Red Robin, and they're doing something. I'm not sure what's going on, but they're doing something. And he looks like he pretty much approves of Dick Grayson being Batman, and he doesn't want to, you know, affect that, you know, make any changes to that group. So that means we're going to get more Batman books, so he can be Batman and Dick Grayson can be Batman.
Wow. Yeah.
So that does sound like pretty key to the whole. These aren't throwaway one shots. Then they seem like they're pretty important.
I mean, at least to the story later. I mean, at least the story after Return, but
now,
there's no explanation
as to, like, how Return ended. There's, like, no reference to, like, what's going on or anything. It's just basically he's back, and it seems like he's been back for a while because Tim's not surprised by him. Tim's been helping him.
Yeah, they're working together in some way.
But it looks like Dick doesn't know he's back, and it looks like Damian doesn't know he's back.
No, they don't know that he's back.
Yeah.
There is definitely the air of Siege and Captain America Reborn about this stuff.
Where we've got events, some events happening after the actual events.
Well, that was a flat-out scheduling cock-up.
Well, like, and this isn't? I mean, that, well, I guess some of this is by design.
These still seem to have been... I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not like they couldn't push the rest of this stuff back.
I always thought that, you know, when we were reading Batman Robin, like, you know, Grant Morrison's Batman Robin book... I always thought, well, you know, the big reveal was going to be that, you know, Bruce is already back anyway. Mm. You know, when the story got caught up in it with Return of Bruce Wayne, I always thought that we were going to find out, well, he's been back, you know, for a long time. You know, because, you know, obviously, you know, he's traveling through time. It would kind of make sense if
he
arrived.
Came back 35 minutes ago.
Or like he came back prior to the events of the story, and he's just been letting Dick Grayson and Damian kind of do their own thing, you know. I sort of saw that happening. It's just I didn't expect it to happen in a one-shot. I didn't expect it to be in this. I thought it would be in the actual Batman and Robin book.
It's really hard to say because it's the same stuff. You know, it can be really hard to tell what's important and what isn't when it comes to Morrison's Batman, because it's like if it's important, you would imagine Morrison would write it.
And another thing worth noting is Morrison didn't write the Road Home. That was actually Fabe Nick.
Yeah, Fabian DeCesa has written all of these.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. So I'm looking forward to the next one. And just looking at this issue, it does say to be continued in Red Robin. So maybe I am reading them in order. So I mean, there's like no, you know, bat symbol with a number on it, like, you know, telling me which order I'd be reading them in or whatnot. You know, it kind of needs that.
Yeah, it could be handy. They brought it back for Superman.
Yeah. Editorial.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Batman and Robin. You know. He's back. Even though we haven't talked about Return of Bruce Wayne yet. Amazing Spider-Man was the next book I read. It's 645, I think. And it's the next, you know, part of the, you know, same storyline. There's like it's been going on where Harry's ex-girlfriend, she's had her baby, and her baby is it's Norman's baby, and Doc Ock's trying to get it because he knows that it's the combination of two, you know, Green Goblin-esque people, so he probably is going to use it to fix his deformed body now, since he's had some hard times lately. Well, in the last issue, Spidey's no longer got the baby. He's not trying to protect it anymore because Chameleon pulled a fast one on him, made him think that he was Harry, and Spidey gave the baby to him. And then Spidey got into another fight with the Vulture, and when he came back, the Chameleon pretending to be Harry has told him that the baby didn't survive because, like, for the last couple of issues, Spidey's been, you know, kind of web-swinging across the city with a newborn and not knowing if, you know, the baby's going to make it or not. So, of course, I guess he's going to believe that, hey, you know, something happened and the baby, you know, is going to die because, you know, he's not even been to a hospital or anything since he's been born. So he loses it. Spidey goes crazy when he finds out that all this stuff he's been doing the last couple of issues to save that baby has been pretty much for nothing, and he's decided he's going to go and take Doc Ock down for good. He's ready to kill a person now is what it seems like. But with this issue, it pretty much starts out, he's not really going after Doc Ock. It looks like he's going after every other villain. And I mean, like, any villain that's ever been a Spidey villain. I mean, you got, like, crazy villains out of the woodwork. The Spots in this issue. gosh, what is this guy's name? The Hypno Hustler is in this issue. Remember the Hypno Hustler?
I'm pretty sure the Hypno Hustler retired.
Wow.
Well, the issue actually starts with the police talking about Spidey. And Spidey looks like he's in a lab trying to get make new webbing because he's run out of webbing. And the police are talking about him and talking about how the baby's no longer with Spider-Man. So everybody thinks that either the baby's dead or something's happened to it. And the Hypno Hustler comes running into the police department saying, "Save me!" He says, "You got to help me. He's on a rampage." He says, "Calm down. Who's on a rampage?" And then he says, "The wall crawler." And then a big ball of webbing comes rolling into the police department, and it's got the Spot in it, and Diablo in it, and gosh, who's this guy? Overdrive. I think Overdrive is one of those new Dan Slott villains. Mm. And it looks like he's just taking everybody out. Screwball he goes after next. He goes after the Looter.
That bitch deserved it.
I mean, he's like taking everybody down, and throughout the issue, we get some more about what's going on with Lily. You know, she's everybody's still trying to find her because they're trying to find that baby. Because Doc Ock basically promised all the villains that if they bring him the baby, he would give them whatever they wanted. So this could be like anything. It could be like some guy who's like, you know, like for example, like the Scorpion. If the Scorpion was still the same Scorpion, he probably promised him to take his suit off or something that he's trapped in. Or, you know, if you're like a villain, you're turned into a monster. He's promised to cure you, and he says, "Because I'm Doc Ock, I can do it." Obviously, he just can't cure himself. But most of the issue is basically just, you know, montage of Spidey just beating the hell out of everybody. I mean, he's just angry as can be. There's like montages of everything. And he eventually, I think he gets what he's been wanting because he's been trying to find where Doc Ock's at. And he gets it from beating the hell out of the Shocker. And the Shocker says, "Oh," he says, "No, no, sweet God, no! Without my costume on, the vibrations will kill me." He's like throwing him into the bay or something, and he's like breaking his Shocker suit. He says, "It's Ock, it's all Ock. This is his doing, all of it. I swear. Go get him. He's at Kravenoff Mansion." So Spidey goes running to the mansion where the last storyline actually pretty much ended. You know, the story with Kraven coming back. And you think that he finds Chameleon, and you think that, well, okay, he's going to find the baby. He actually finds out that the baby's still alive, and it turns out that Chameleon no longer has it, because when Chameleon got the baby and Spidey left in his murderous rage, he was actually attacked by another villain, so he had no baby to bring back to Doc Ock to get you know, his reward for finding the kid. And it turns out that the villain that captured the baby is that new version of the lizard that's crazy and actually ate his son.
Yeah, so, I'm wondering if he's looking for some kind of surrogate now or what.
I don't know, but yeah, it was a good issue. I liked it, and I thought that this would be the conclusion because this has been going on for several issues. I think this is like the fourth or fifth issue or something this story's been going on with. And usually the stories, usually they're like three issue chapters. Usually don't go beyond that unless it's like something big like the Return of Kraven. But this one, it looks like it's actually going to conclude next issue. So I was expecting it to end in this one, but hey, you know, it's one more issue with Mark Waid, so I'm happy with that. But yeah, it was good. I liked it.
Nice. And that's your stuff, Ben.
Was just happy to see the lizard. I just twigged at the very end that it was the lizard who'd taken it. And I always like it whenever they remember that brief shining time when Doc Ock truly was Spider-Man's greatest enemy.
Well, I think he kind of...
It was like 75 to 95, Doc Ock was the greatest Spider-Man villain because Norman was dead.
Well, he kind of still is now. I mean, because like, he's more dangerous now, even though he's like weakened and he's you know, almost a vegetable now. But he's so creepy and he's so just crazy now.
Well, I mean Ock's he's been off the table in the big villain sticks for so long, you know, since they brought him back for whatever issue 600.
Well, they even killed him off at one
Norman Osborn has... Sorry?
they even killed him off at one point, like back in the, was it the 90s?
Yeah, oh yeah, but the Bone Saga, that was that whip to the...
Yeah.
That was at a point in time when he still was Spider-Man's greatest villain, you know. Although he was probably being edged out by Venom at that point. But, I mean...
Well, I think it's because Straczynski didn't really focus on him that much. I don't remember him ever being in the Straczynski stuff, was he? Like when JNS was there.
I don't think so.
Yeah. But Dan Slott, you know, said... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Norman has... You know, he occupies his... He's Spider-Man's Joker. He's his Lex Luthor now, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. For about 20 years, that was Ock.
Yeah.
And I like it whenever people give Ock a bit of respect, because he's had very little of that in the last... Well, since he came back to life, really.
Yeah. But it's good stuff. Oh, and before we move away from Spider-Man, has anybody... they've been actually teasing... I believe it's the beginning of Dan Slott's, you know, where he's going to be the regular writer instead of, you know, having mm-hmm. you know, switch out writers and stuff.
Big time.
Big time. They actually have a trailer out for it. Has anybody seen that? And
I haven't actually. I know it's out there, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I ain't gonna, you know, talk about it too much, but there looks like some cool stuff's coming up. November, I think, is when it starts, and they're talking like it's a big jumping on point. So, like, if anybody's been kind of, you know, saying, hey, I want to read
Amazing
Spider-Man.
I am very seriously considering it.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's mm-hmm. considering getting Amazing Spider-Man, maybe feel like, oh, well, you know, there's so much that's been going on with the 3 issues a month deal that I can't get caught up now. Sounds like November is the time to get caught up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sweet. Okay. McFeely, we will turn to you, sir.
Okay. See, what have I got? What have I got this week? Well, I said I would talk about it, so I can't let the listeners down. Tiny Titans Little Archie came out this week.
Sweet.
Yeah, it is. And it's pretty much what you would expect. It turns out Riverdale and Sidekick City are not very far away from each other at all. Why they even share the same dry cleaners. And a hilarious mix-up results in Robin and Archie getting winding up with each other's clothes. And meeting each other on... Well, Robin is they're each mistaken for each other by their respective friends. And so the Titans are invited to come to Riverdale Elementary for the day. And, you know, Jughead has burgers in his knapsack and everybody introduces themselves... And the true laugh out loud moment is the story where they meet Archie's teacher, Mrs. Grundy, and Robin fears that she might be related to Solomon Grundy.
That's exactly what I thought when you said that. Oh my god!
Oh my god!
The living undead zombie who haunts the swamplands. Zombie? Swamplands? That's ridiculous. I don't know the Solomon Grundy you speak of. I don't believe her. Solomon might have changed his name to Steve or something to fool her. He's known to do that.
You should have asked her if she was born on a Monday. See if she...
God.
I can't do the punchline justice because it involves the visuals of the issue. I would tell you what it is, but honestly, I can't do it justice. So you have to go out and buy this one to see the joke. It made me cackle like a bastard. It is the funniest moment of the issue. And it seems to end on a little bit of cliffhangers, because this is a 3-issue miniseries. It's not really a cliffhanger, but Mr. Weatherby and Slade are old pals. So they're off to do something. Yeah, Slade is the principal of the Tiny Titans school, if I've never mentioned that before, and Mr. Trigon is one of their sub-teachers. So they're getting ready to go out and meet with Mr. Weatherby at the usual spot. So I'm assuming, rather hoping, that might be picked up on in the next issue. It's hard to tell with Tiny Titans sometimes. There's a great running gag about how Kid Devil keeps trying to play tic-tac-toe with those weird little hash marks on the side of Archie's head as well.
Sweet.
yeah, so just great. If you have joy in your heart, Tiny Titans is worth looking at, definitely. And that's the the Solomon Grundy gag punchline is the funniest moment of the issue, and I would read it. I would tell you it, since we're doing spoilers, but it involves too much visuals. So instead, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about Thor. Let's talk about the second issue of Matt Fraction's Thor, out only 2 weeks after the last issue.
What's up with that?
I don't know. Thor's been coming out very, very intermittently.
See, I expected the next issue would be like a month or two away. I figured that maybe there might be like a month we'll miss or something, because it seems like it's good stuff, and seems like the best stuff usually takes time, you know?
Or maybe they had some stuff backed up a little.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not like with Gillen's fill-in run, where they had, I think it was Doug Braithwaite doing one issue and Richard Elson doing the other. You know, this is still Pascal Ferry, and it's still the same creative team through and through, so... I mean, but Gillen's run was sometimes running bi-weekly as well. I think the last two issues of it came out bi-weekly, so... here we go, 2 weeks later. And this issue, actually, to be completely honest, not a lot happens in this issue. There's a lot of retreading what we saw in the last issue. You know, last time we had this human scientist trying to explain his cosmological ideas that something would come to fill the void that Asgard was in to Volstagg. Volstagg was the man of science we tiptoed around naming last time. And in this one, he tries to explain it to Thor. And last issue, we saw these evil, red-skinned, monstrous aliens break their way into one of the nine realms. I forget which one, the icy one. And here we see them doing a little bit more breaking of the wall between worlds. And Thor misses Loki some more, and Heimdall gets another spooky vision of bad stuff coming in the future again. So it is, frankly, a little bit on the repetitive side. It's entertaining, certainly, but it's still just not as... It doesn't quite follow up on the promise of the first issue, but I think once things start rolling, the quality will pick right back up. But definitely a repetitive first issue. But we do get some new material in that Kelda, the female goddess who loved Bill, the human warrior, in Straczynski's run. Well, she's still not well, God love her. She's just down in Broxton crying, and she's being visited by the... what did they call them? The Biddy Brigade of Broxton, with their soups and chowders to try and cheer her up. So that'll probably be going somewhere. And also the cliffhanger moment of the issue. Well, if we're doing spoilers, I'll just do the spoilers, which did make me go, oh, crap, really? That's not a good idea. Is Thor deciding, yeah, he's going to use his power to bring Loki back. And it's like, what the hell, dude? Seriously.
Why? I mean...
I know! It's like, how is that a good idea, you know?
Yeah.
Baldur's okay. Sitting there telling him, his foul villainy put us all in this state. He may have done the deed, not have done the deed himself, but the fall of Asgard is the doing of Loki. To bring him back would be an atrocity.
He needs to bring Bill back as a god. Can he do that now?
Dunno. Bill's in Valhalla.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised. But it's so I mean, he's doing them. That's the end point of the thing. But the cover of the next issue has Loki as a child, though, so we shall see.
Hmm.
But yeah, I wish I had more to say about Thor, but there's a lot of redundancy in the face of the second issue. You know, the stuff is explained again. The aliens are still there and menacing. I mean, we seem to meet the king of the aliens. What's his name? Thoth? No, where is it? His name is... We are a professional podcast.
Still leaves him bound more professional than superhero.
No, it just seems to be his name is just Thoth. I thought he had a couple more hyphens and apostrophes in there. But his name is just Thoth. He and what seems to be his daughter or his wife or his consort or what it is, and his seems to be his man of science or his vizier are the last three living things in the world of Ano Athox, their dimension, and it's kind of cool actually. As he exits the dimension by activating a machine that collapses the dimension on itself and basically shoves him out of it as it collapses. And he materializes in the realm that they conquered last issue.
So it's like one of those motorized chairs for old people who can't quite get up on their own, except it's a whole dimension like that.
This dude is ripped. So yeah, that's the second issue of Fraction Store. It's a little repetitive, but doesn't do anything to dull my enthusiasm and general positive emotion towards the run. Would just have to hope that the next issue does more. Perhaps, probably a lot more willing to excuse it, given that it's only been 2 weeks since the last one, you know. But then, you know, conversely, when I pick up X-Men Forever, which is the next thing on my stack here, and I see how much can happen in one issue of it, when it's bi-weekly consistently, you know. Not that I have anything to say about this week's X-Men Forever. Chris Claremont masturbates violently to Kitty Pryde being a badass. Is 22 pages, you know. But that's how Chris Claremont has lived most of his life. No, mind you, when I say it's been out consistently, the next issue page does say on sale the day that this issue actually came out. So, not exactly up to date. Still a comic I read. Still the one X book that I read, and the only X book I ever will read. But I don't want to put any focus on it right now. I also have New Avengers, in which things are not what they seem. I won't spoil this one, because I know some people will go on to read this, but seems that the individual who who is after the Eye and the stories he's telling about the Eye are not wholly truthful. And that certainly does put the conflict on a slightly different level than what we thought it was. And we thought it was a pretty big level when the Ancient One seemed to be coming back from the dead and demanding it be turned over. So, although it is,
it kind of seemed like Doctor Strange was the bad guy.
Yeah, I thought that might have been a slightly more interesting route to take it in, frankly, because Doctor Strange has been known to have his dalliances with arrogance when it comes to magic. But it is a comic that blows the last page on the cover. So, and a consistently, as ever, a gorgeous comic, Stuart Immonen. Sometimes I always have to just look at the credits and remind myself that that's Stuart Immonen, because the first couple of pages, I didn't look at them and go, hey, Stuart Immonen. But then that's kind of the defining thing about Stuart Immonen, is that sometimes you're never sure if it is him. I remember whenever he drew the last issue of Mark Miller's Fantastic Four and imitated Brian Hitch so well, I didn't even realize until I read the credits at the end.
Yeah. He still has that Brian Hitch-ish looking art anyway. I mean, it still reminds me a lot of Brian Hitch's stuff. Nothing wrong with it, because I like Brian Hitch's art. Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, Immonen's art's just changed so much since I've been reading comics. It's been crazy.
Well, it changes depending on the project he's working on, you know? This doesn't look like Ultimate Spider-Man, which didn't look like Next Wave.
Which didn't look like Thor. His Thor was totally different.
That's right, he did do some Thor, didn't he?
His Thor looked like painted. It almost looked Alex Ross-like, you know, like it was a painting or something. It was nothing like what he's doing now.
I'm going to go bust out some issues of that to remind myself, because I can't even bring it to mind.
I always remember he did Thor because he did this fantastic shot of Surtur, because it was he did it around when Odin died, because Odin died fighting Surtur.
Yeah, I remember that. Wow,
yeah, man. That was some of those issues. Jeez, it's awesome. Okay,
I forgot that. Honestly, I forgot that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're just quite all right. I don't really have much else to say. Like with so much of New Avengers, it comes down to talking about how good the art is, you know, because it remains an entertaining book. But as we always say about New Avengers, it's the book that exists because Bendis wants it to exist. Yep, I don't have much of an opinion otherwise. But I do have an opinion about this other thing, which is the last thing on my list this week, and which is a rather strange one. It is, in fact, Strange Tales 2. Now, this is a little something different. I don't know if anybody, in fact, I've talked about it briefly in passing, so I don't think you guys did read Strange Tales, the new Strange Tales miniseries from late last year, earlier this year. This is the second. It's a 3-issue miniseries. 48 pages, no ads, of indie comics creators doing short stories about anybody and everybody, about Marvel characters. This is a Marvel book. The stories are anywhere between 2 and 8 pages long, and are anything from perfectly straight, serious tales that could have been printed anywhere, to comedy one-shots, or really artsy, up-their-own-arse jobs. this issue is... there's always going to be hits and misses when it comes to a project like this, but there's definitely more hits and misses in this particular issue. Kicks off with a... Here, let me get the creative list up here. Kicks off with a Wolverine story, an 8-page Wolverine one by Raphael Grandpa, writer and artist of Mesmo Delivery from Dark Horse. I'm reading off the back here. Which is a story of a Wolverine who has become addicted to the pain that his healing factor allows him to bear. And it's a tale of him and various other Marvel characters with healing factors as some kind of ultimate fighting champion style thing who object horrible, brutal pain on each other and enjoy it night after night for the entertainment of others. It's rather grim. But the story is called Dear Logan because it's narrated by a woman. I don't think it's supposed to be any woman in particular, but she's in the audience watching the fight, who Logan has warped with his... He's opened her mind up to violence and pain as a sexual thing, and she's been warped by it. And it's pretty nasty. Yeah, that's the... But then, you know, contrasted immediately with a 4-page story about Leapfrog by Jean Luen Yang. I don't know Jean Luen Yang. I don't know if you guys know Leapfrog, the loser Spider-Man character, the son of...
Oh, yeah.
The string lifted, and it's about him having achieved a karmic balance with the universe because he cocks up every time he tries to do something good, but everything always works out for the best anyway. So he's decided to embrace that as a superheroing principle and do it blindfold. Then there's it's a funny little story. Then there's a Silver Surfer story I don't get. I'm not sure if the point of it is to cut the panels out and try to assemble them in the correct order to make a scene.
Genius! Genius! I need to buy this!
I don't think that is the point, though.
That wasn't the intention, right?
It's one of those artsy up-its-arse jobs.
Oh, my God.
But then there's a fantastic 2-pager by... Who did this one? This was by... Kate Beaton, who is checking it. She's artist of the webcomic Hark a Vagrant, which I'm sure some of our listeners would be passing familiar with. But the story is called a Distraction, in which Spider-Man attempts to keep Kraven the Hunter out of his hair for the night by sending Kraven a fake invite to the prom.
What?
Yeah. It's just a simple short two-parter. Kraven finds the invite in his mailbox, reads it,
an invitation to the prom. I must go on the hunt for a date.
So we see Kraven hunt and trap his date and take her to prom.
Oh my God.
What?
It's a good laugh. There's followed by a 4-page... pretty unremarkable Dazzler one, I thought, by who did this one? Jillian Tamaki, who is... I'm going to go through this whole issue. Artist of Skim. I'm not familiar with her. That seems to be based mostly... she, after finishing a show, she gets attacked by a pair of muggers who are rival musicians, I believe. And super powered, of course. And it seems more about the crazy visuals that can go hand in hand with Dazzler's sound and light powers, but I find it fairly unremarkable.
Is it possible to tell a good Dazzler story?
Well, there's that. Followed up by a pretty amusing Red Skull story by Shannon Wheeler about how he's given up evil and moved to live in a small town in the South small village in the isolation of the South American rainforest, defending it against loggers, and faced with the unfortunate fact that Captain America turns up desperate to believe he must be doing evil, despite the fact that he willingly gives himself up to. I would kill myself 1,000 times if it meant saving those I love. It's an odd one, but a fun one.
Wow.
Sort of stuff this book's doing. Yeah, then there's a 4-page Spidey one that is up its arse again. I don't get it. It's seems to be done in pencil with random watercolor swirl backgrounds about... Makes sense for Spidey gets trapped in an illusion by Mysterio and uses his spider sense to break out of it. And then the final page is about how the upside-down kiss scene was filmed for the film. I don't know. Maybe I'm
what?
Just... Yep. Huh? It's some sort of meta-commentary on movie-making or entertainment. I don't know. You know, there's a much more direct one by Kevin Huizenga that follows that, which is about Wolverine and the Silver Surfer doing motion capture for a video game. Just a collection of 6-panel pages as they throw their special attacks at each other and guys get them in little ping pong ball suits to capture them. And it's full of lots of...
You weren't kidding when you said strange tales, because these have been some strange ones.
But then after that, there's one of these ones that I was talking about that's a pretty straightforward one. It's one by Jeff Lemire, who's doing the Atom and Superboy backups in for DC at the minute. He did Sweet Tooth as well for Vertigo. And it's about a Canadian Mountie who has been sent up with a detachment of men to investigate the disappearance of a bunch of loggers whose disappearances have been blamed on the Wendigo. Of course, he doesn't believe in any of that stuff. But when he voyages out into the woods, he sees things that maybe make him think otherwise. I'm not going to spoil the ending of that one because it's not what you'd think. It's rather good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Because one of my favorite C-listers pops up at the end. So I'm not saying what or who. And then we've got another one by Jonan Vasquez. He of Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, Squee, and perhaps most famously Invader Zim. The Nickelodeon cartoon. In which a fat, lovelorn Wolverine gorges himself on hot dogs in the park. And talks the ear off of 2 children who would much rather just go away from him.
Wow.
they accidentally knock one of his hot dogs out of his hand with his frisbee, and they run up to him, realize who it is, and start freaking out, only for him to start talking about how much being an adult hurts and how evil women are. And a sentinel turns up to try and kill him, but he looks at him and is like, death to all mutants. Ooh. Wait. Oh, man. Aren't you going to kill him? It's what you guys do, right?
Yeah, but look at him. I don't want that on my scorecard. The other Sentinels will laugh at me. What about you? Do you have any weird powers?
And then he kills one of the kids.
What?
Well, this kid is... Louis here can do that thing where it looks like his thumb's coming off.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the master of that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good enough.
Oh my god.
Bones flying everywhere. If you've read anything Jonan Vasquez, you know this. It marries a rather cutesy, cel-shaded, super deformed, cartoonish style with rather dark stuff.
That sounds awesome.
It is awesome.
Wow.
It would be the best strip of the issue if it wasn't for the final 2 pages. Which are by the creator of the Perry Bible Fellowship. Now, the deafening silence there makes me assume you heathens don't know the Perry Bible Fellowship.
No.
It's a webcomic.
I see.
Oh, the web. Oh, I know what that is.
It is. It's a discontinued webcomic, but it's a wonderful webcomic. It's been collected in hardback compendiums, and it is just fantastically artistic, fully painted, pastels, pencil, everything. This is a simply gorgeous four panels, two pages, of Magneto and Galactus proposing an alliance. And
I'm glad you followed it up with alliance, because my mind was substituting.
Well, there are three speech bubbles in the entirety of the thing, and I really don't want to spoil this at all, because this is worth the price of admission. Just a massive cackle for the end of it, you know. I looked at it and I was like, wait a minute. You know, as soon as I read that, I didn't twig that it was by the Perry Bible Fellowship. Nicholas Gurwitch is the guy's name. And I didn't twig that it was his right away, but as soon as the punchline happened, I was like, wait a minute, is that my... Oh my god, it is awesome. And I hope he's got more stuff in the upcoming issues of this series. So that's a quick rundown for all of this issue of Strange Tales. But I don't think I've blown too many spoilers there. There's definitely more material. Yes, I haven't spoiled the end of any of the best strips in there. Unusual. I'm always in favor. See, you know, I'm a guy who doesn't buy a lot of indie stuff or any indie stuff as my pull lists for this show week after week, no doubt prove. But it's not that I don't want to. It's just that I'm too mainstream for my own good. So I always like to try and support whenever Marvel does something on the outer rim like this. It's kind of like the hua-ha of our day, you know, the comedy equivalent of What If. But with a more modern, instead of just doing stuff for the sake of fun, like the idea behind it is more to give creators who wouldn't normally work on these characters or this universe a chance to do something different, be it a perfectly straight take like the Wolverine story or what I assume the Silver Surfer story is supposed to be about, or indeed the Dazzler one, even though that's a little more on the edge, or to do something completely bizarre and hilarious and left field, like the motion capture story, or the Wolverine story, the Joan Vasquez story, or the Perry Bible Fellowship one. Oh, the Wendigo story is another one that's just a perfectly straight story. There's a great mix of comedy and drama. Not much in the way of action I suppose that first story is full of brutal action, and of course there was that kid that got reduced to bones. But there's a little bit of everything in here. Something for everybody is probably not actually the best way to describe this, because it's so strange. it's right there in the title. There's nothing mainstream about it, you know. There's a few that wear the mainstream mask while doing something very different with the subject matter. But as far as this issue goes, definitely more hits than misses. There's one or two misses in it. The Silver Surfer one, I don't know what's going on in that one. But it's still better than I remember one of the big misses from the final issue of the previous series, which was a comic in the sense that there were certainly pictures on the page, but there was... Jeez, I don't know what was going on. But I definitely, actually, if you're looking for something a little bit different, you know, if the mainstream grind has you down, but you don't know where to go on the indie scene, this is something that straddles the fence between the two, and you get some laughs out of it, definitely. And there's a few in it. It's like, but the ones that are funny or similarly well written outweigh them and make the comic worth it, I think. So yeah, that is Strange Tales, something a little different for this week, and that's me.
Nice.
Cool.
Okay. Well, fasten your seatbelts, kids. Here we go.
Is it time for Booster Gold? Because I can't wait.
I'm going to do Booster first, just because it's going to need...
Because I've heard the legend of this issue.
It's going to need some pretty big palate cleansers for me. I love Booster Gold, and I don't know that I can put a finger on entirely why. It could be his sort of odd origin. It could be the fact that he spends a lot of time traveling these days. You know, He's got a lot of everyman qualities. Now, he's not always been that way. And as we've talked over the last few weeks, the comic, or months rather, the comic has sort of digressed into the storylines that it used to be at when Booster was just sort of a big D-list cock-up sort of character. Why they've gone back to that, I don't know. And yet here we are. So,
nostalgia of the creative team.
Yeah, but
that sounds like a medical condition.
Yeah, it really, and I think it is, because I don't know who's clamoring for this, 'cause it's terrible. In this issue, we're left, I mean, basically, again, we're right from the last. Let me put it this way. There's a character named Estragina.
Or is it Estragina?
You know what? I'm going to say Estragina because I don't want it to be Estragina. Because for as sexist as this issue is, I'm trying to give it some grace. But man. No, it's probably supposed to be Estragina. We get it. It's estrogen.
Sounds like vagina.
It sounds like estrogen and vagina together.
Like
and
the what women have.
Yeah, like women have. And what is she? She's a big, strong, tall, big-boobed woman who wants to kill tons of things and then fuck Booster to death. They might as well have called the character PMS. That's the entire issue. Like, she eats...
I was waiting for something to happen, but...
Nothing! I mean, other than that, nothing happened. Oh, she... I mean, probably the biggest moment of suspense is that she eats Chipmunk Blue Beetle. Yes, I said Chipmunk Blue Beetle.
Because wait a minute, there's a Chipmunk Blue Beetle?
He got turned into a chipmunk by magic.
Is this the new Blue Beetle or is this the old Blue Beetle?
This is the old Blue Beetle. That's the thing is this entire story is taking place in the past during the heyday of Justice League International.
That's why it's stupid.
Because
it was stupid back then. Okay, I get it now.
Yes, right. It was stupid then. It's stupid now, and yet
it
we're revisiting
then,
it.
But we didn't know the characters could be more than that.
Yes, so we didn't have any concept. So, I don't know. And some of these characters are really out of character, if you ask me. I mean, Skeets is really weird, but...
I kind of like what they're doing with Skeets, to be honest.
I mean, I like it well enough, but it's not where that character has even been, if you can call him a character, I guess. But, I don't know what to say other than that. I mean, it's not an exaggeration. Literally, this woman is carrying around Booster for the entire issue... Because her intention is to have sex with him until he dies.
Woo! That'll sell a comic.
Crushed pelvises.
Yeah. It's... And then, like, there's just weird bits. Like, at the end, Booster travels forward in time to ask Ted how he gets out of...
I kind of
the
like
woman,
that now,
which is kind of weird. I mean, it's not bad. It's just weird.
It's nice use of time travel. It's like,
yeah.
He travels forward. You can't fix it in the past, so he travels forward and asks Ted, "How did we get out of that again?" Oh yeah, and then goes back and lets things happen.
And somewhere, like Rip is face palming because he's like, "You can't do that."
That's not how it works.
So yeah, and then so the vagina woman vomits Ted up. And yeah. I mean, and here's how you can tell, in my opinion, that the storytelling is really bad. They established in the last issue that Ted was, or two issues ago, that Ted had been turned into a chipmunk by this sorceress, and that it was permanent, and that she couldn't, even if she wanted to, she couldn't turn him back, whatever the magic was. Well, then they just decide, oh no, she must have been lying. Because it just wore off. What? Yeah. Then why establish that it's permanent? Like, they could have just left that out. You know what I mean? Like, they could have just left out the bit. I mean, she could have even said, no, I could, but I'm not going to, or whatever. And then they do the thing, oh, it wears off, or you're not going to be worried about it. But to do the whole point and say, no, it's permanent, it can't be taken off, and then it wears off, she was lying? What? It just doesn't... I don't understand why you do that from a storytelling standpoint. But I got to the end of this issue, and I was... for everything, for being offended because of the entirely sexist character, you know, whatever. For thinking the entire issue was stupid.
If it had been remotely funny,
you could
have seen past it if they were doing it for comedy's sake, but it wasn't even funny.
No, it wasn't even funny. It didn't move the story on at all.
I don't know about you, but I got to this, and the Ted's a human again. They're both safe. It's all good. They teleport back to the roof of the, wherever it is that the JLI live. And it's like, hey, it's all done. Hooray. We've won. And then it's like, oh, we have to go get that book yet. And I mean,
yes!
I just went, fuck.
That is the point that...
not over yet.
That is the point that really pissed me off. I could have forgiven almost everything else if we would have gotten to the end of the issue and Booster's like, okay, well, I got to go back and do my thing or whatever. But no, we are promised more of this crap.
Not just this crap, but more Dark Stars, which has been the low point of the whole damn thing.
Yes, because who cares?
More entertained by this issue than the last issue, which was half Dark Stars. Who the fuck are the Dark Stars, and why should I care?
Yeah.
Next issue is my last issue of Booster Gold. That's a promise on air. I'm going to get to the end of this story arc. I read the solicitation for the issue after next, which was that Booster finally accepts that he can't. There's no way for him to bring Ted back, so he kind of loses a bit, goes back to the 25th century, and tries to return to his old life there, except, you know, hey, wanted for game fixing. And I thought, hey, that sounds actually pretty good. Maybe they're going to go. But you know what? No, any goodwill that solicitation evoked in me was mercilessly erased by this.
Yeah.
I am done.
Well, I'm not, because I hate myself and I love Booster. So I'm going to hope that once this arc is done, that it will be better. But, man, I was disappointed,
you know,
offended.
It started out all right. These guys run on Booster. Started okay. I mean, I know a guy, my co-worker, he was getting Booster as well, and he dropped it after that first issue right away. So
that would have been the smart thing to do.
Powers of Prediction, yes, I can't fault him there. But then I thought the next issue after that was good. I mean, I really enjoyed that one where we went back in time to look for, you know, evidence for Max Lord. And then they turned that one issue into this sprawling thing. And it's like, Jesus, guys. I mean, there's something to be said for not living in the past, which seems to be the lesson Booster is going to learn out of all of this. But whenever it's the lesson, the writer should be learning.
It's Giffen and Demetrius.
Giffen and Demetrius.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm going to recenter myself. A little palate cleanser. Talk about Justice League.
The one thing I would give this issue is that Estragina doesn't seem to have been a character from the 1980s in their run on Justice League.
Yeah, that does seem to be a new offensive character that they wrote just for this particular issue.
Yeah, just for this special. Don't we feel blessed?
Yay. God. I mean, it was just like... I'll go ahead and say, I was talking to Melissa over text, and I was telling her about the issue, and she was talking about, you know, how... Basically, we were saying it's like, it's this kind of stuff that makes people think that fanboys and people that read comic books are just sad, fat guys that sit in dark basements and masturbate to their comic books.
Well, I would like to meet the guy who's capable of masturbating to that.
No, I don't want to be that
actually,
person.
Oh, yeah, whoa, hold on, yeah.
Think about what you're saying.
Yeah, no. Anyway.
Pretty nice.
I'm back to my zen-like state. We are okay. Jen Lost was thankfully much better. This is
the serious Booster book, right?
Yeah. It's sort of odd that there are three titles that have Booster Gold in them, and the one that sucks is the one with his name on it. The other two are excellent. So, well, one's excellent and the other's pretty good. This one is excellent, however. So, Yeah, this is another one with Booster. This is our basically, this is sort of the late, I guess you'd consider it to be the late Justice League International group that are chasing around trying to find Max Lord. It opens up with this weird story of these people running through a forest, and they're being attacked by cyborg centaurs, and it's sort of confusing until you realize that it's actually the Metal Men living out a fantasy, if you will, inside a virtual reality chamber where they are being processed and reprogrammed by Max Lord and Anthony Iovo. And so that sort of explains, and this is like, hey, there's a little bit of editorial. We're told that that was a week ago. So that explains why the Metal Men suddenly show up, because apparently Max has had them sort of in his back pocket. And when we get back to Rockets Red, Fire, and Ice, who were last issue going through an old Justice League installation, is where they find the Metal Men. And most of the issue is sort of this fight sequence between them. Of course, the Metal Men don't know who they're fighting. They're still sort of in this virtual reality construct. They don't even necessarily know who they are. They're seeing the rest of the team as enemies. Until Iovo unleashes a bit of awesome, which apparently was preempted by things that happened on Brave and the Bold and somewhere else.
Yeah,
but
yeah. That was a good episode of Brave and the Bold.
But I missed it, so I thought this was awesome. which is a Metal Men gestalt. Wow.
It's called Alloy, and it appeared in Kingdom Come. But Brave and the Bold featured it as the concluding part of their Starro two-parter less than, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something like that.
The appearance of it in this book was a violently preempted. I just sucked all the wind out of it.
But I hadn't.
Homage to a thing. Oh, damn.
Somehow I have missed Kingdom Come. It's on my list, but I've not read that yet. So I thought this was awesome, and it is awesome. Actually, I think even
well,
on its own.
I can't deny that. But
so in other news, Booster, Captain Atom, and Blue Beetle find an OMAC robot factory that apparently Iovo has also been working on. And, yeah. But most of it is, again, coming back and them fighting Alloy. And at one point, Fire gets basically the crap punched out of her and sort of knocked around, and Ice gets hit pretty hard. And then after that, we see Ice apparently jump a power level or two. Because the end of the issue shows her what I would consider to be an ice equivalent of, like, Fire's fire form, like almost like an ice elemental form. Very Iceman, if you will. Skin is blue, hair, and, you know, covered in sort of bits of ice, and very badass looking. And the next issue apparently is Fire versus Ice, so she may be a little feral as well. She definitely doesn't look happy. So that can be interesting. So I'm not sure what really triggered that or what's going on with that bit. But it was very good. Like, made me feel better after I read Booster. So.
Well, that's good.
So, yes.
It must have seemed infinitely superior.
Yeah, I mean, and even Booster wasn't even in that very much, but man, I was happy when I saw the Metal Men gestalt. I just thought that was damn cool. there was a ton of one-shots that came out this week. One I'm going to talk about real briefly is The Untold Tales of Blackest Night. I'm not going to go into a great bit on this, but this was apparently, some of this was bits that were supposed to be in Blackest Night that got cut. Some of these were sort of behind-the-scenes stories. One of them involving the Yellow Lantern bookkeeper, who apparently now is going to be working for our mysterious Guardian, I guess, or whoever it is that's sort of pulling the strings behind the Brightest Day.
That's snatching up the emotional entities.
Yes, that person thing that everybody knows who they are but us. So, some of the cut stories and some of these stories were okay. Some were really weird. Like, there was a whole extended Animal Man story, which was just crap. I didn't...
Aww.
It was okay. It was just like, I don't really care about Animal Man.
No, I don't care either. I'm just saying, aww.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It just was like, who cares about Animal Man?
I don't mind Animal Man, but these were kind of stories that sort of been told. And, you know, I probably need to take my socks off to count the number of stories that have seen Animal Man finally been threatened and him redouble his dedication to being a better hero. And
yeah, exactly. Boring. Boring. Who cares? One of my favorite bits was when they... Ragman's, like, entire costume is turned into Black Lantern's.
And see, that's sort of, awesome.
It sort of just explodes into Black Lantern's. Like, there's one shot that sort of reminds me of that sequence from one of the Nightmare on Elm Street films when you see all the faces in his skin. Yeah, it's sort of like that, but like with skulls.
See, that's
and hands.
One of the great. One of like, there's a lot more potential in the concept of Blackest Night than. Well, I wouldn't say not than you would think, but perhaps more than was realized in this series. I mean, ultimately, the stuff that Blackest Night did, as much as we enjoy Blackest Night, because we all agreed we enjoyed it, but for all it did, it just was like, oh, look who's dead, but now isn't. There was none of that stuff. Like, that other deleted scene that's in that issue with the Rainbow Raiders.
Yeah.
The different colors who drink the Kool-Aid, as it were, and top themselves so that they can become dead and be Black Lanterns too and take over the world. And then it just ends with a wee narration caption from the Flash going, as far as we can tell, it's only those with emotional ties to us that are dying. Everyone else is just dead. They're just dead.
Which is great, because they just killed themselves for no reason. Yeah, that was kind of funny. And there was a little bit more of the Donna...
That's a genuine deleted scene, though.
That was
genuine things that were cut out of Blackest Night.
Yeah, the Ragman scene was actually cut. I think this Donna story was just giving more backstory, but I didn't care then, and I don't really care now, so...
And Ed Bennett drew it, so it's pretty, at least.
Yeah. I thought the Scarecrow story was kind of throwaway, but still kind of fun and weird. And then I actually really liked this one. I never can remember this character's name, but she's the Yellow Lantern with the pack.
I don't remember either.
I can't remember her name, but I thought that was
there's a lot of vowels in it, and maybe some S's.
Yeah. Yeah, but I thought it was, because it's sort of a growling sound.
I'm sure
thing,
there's a hyphen in there for good measure, too.
If you don't know anything about this character, I mean, basically she was raised by... She always has as her avatar, as her constructs, these sort of demonish wolf-looking things. And they're actually constructs that are supposed to be like her parents. They're essentially... She was sort of raised by these wolf things.
She's the one with the funny mouth, right?
Yes. Yeah, she's the one that they always draw, that. Like, with her hair over her mouth, and then when you see it, it's all screwed up. Yeah. So there was apparently... I don't know if this was deleted or if this is an extra sequence. I think that's a new story. But essentially, the Black Lantern version of her, of the actual wolf demon parent thing, show up and tell her that...
Again, see, that's really cool. That's
awesome. You know. Yeah, and basically a Green Lantern shows up to help her, and they destroy them, and then she kills the Green Lantern, blows his head off. After he tries to console her and basically say, you know, it's you did what you had to do and whatever, and she, it was awesome. Anyway, but other than that, I mean, I don't know if it was worth $5.
Oh my gosh!
Well, that was big. It was big.
$5.
Strange Tales was $5 too, but it didn't have any ads.
God, yeah, this was. I don't know. It was fun. I mean, I'm not sad that I bought it. It was just. Man. Anyway, on to other things. We're almost there, kids. Green Lantern.
Is he still with us?
Yeah, I think he's probably
asleep. There's no way I hear it.
So apparently it's all about the blue today for the Green Lantern stories. In primary Green Lantern, first thing that happens is the Butcher tears through a prison, apparently, and Atrocitus and Sinestro show up, basically hot on his trail. The crazy part is when Atrocitus, there's like an entire bus full of prisoners, and Atrocitus can sense like their rage, and he turns to one of the humans and he's, you know, he says something about being able to sense them, sense the rage in them, ask who they are, and says to him that he knows that they're all murderers, essentially based on the kind of rage that they have. And so, you know, asked him to confirm, and he's like, yeah, they're murderers. And he's like, well, then let me do what you should, and kills them all.
Bitchin'.
Yeah. And as they're leaving, Sinestro's like, you know, I don't really care about them, but I was just curious as to why you do. And Atrocitus makes the point that those who take life deserve to lose it, which Sinestro finds wonderfully ironic. And mentions that he's
going to... It makes me wonder if Atrocitus thinks he's doing good in all the murdering he does, or if he believes that that fate awaits him, too. It's just with that one line, it added a whole other dimension to that character for me.
If yeah.
He's supposed to, you know.
Yeah, I think so, and I really like that. Especially
these
when...
These are guys who definitely seem to believe... They definitely have some sort of belief in some kind of higher power, the power of prophecy. But, don't get the full story there. I mean, there's these rumblings apparently came out of NYCC that there's some kind of new core book is going to be launched sometime soon.
Ooh.
And we don't know what it is yet, but I think most of the money, the smart money, is on the Red Lanterns.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for the Red Lanterns for some reason.
Especially the cat.
Yeah.
Yes. Who love can't that. Love Dexter? yes. Bullshit stuff between Hal and Carol. Nobody cares about that. And then Arda shows up and chooses a human host, who's a poor girl who's about to be probably raped and
That's
killed
the hope
by
entity now.
This. Yes, Arda, the hope entity. The only one that we can actually remember their name, other than Parallax and Ion. I don't know, Butcher, I guess, is easy, too, but the others are sort of...
Predator is easy as well.
Predators. Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess we can remember all of them.
Ophidius is there. Ophidian.
Yeah, Ophidian is the weird name, but that's...
Proselyte is the indigo one.
Indigo, yeah, the indigo one and the whatever color, the orange one, yeah. But anyway.
Not all of them. Did we name all of them?
I think we did. That's amazing. Between all of us, we knew what they were.
You guys are on the ball more than I am.
I'm telling you, it's like we read these comics. We get to see that's one of the things that I think that's interesting about this issue is in some ways we get to see a different side or a more complex side of some of these characters. Because you see Lar Flees and he's having trouble... having enough power to keep his constructs going. And it's very short because they don't have the time to really flesh it out. But he asks the ring to check his power level. It says it's at 74%, and he asks it to check again, and it's 74. And I get the feeling that if this other character hadn't interceded, he probably would have sat there and done that for like an hour.
Yeah.
You know.
He's such the best character in Green Lantern now.
But he suddenly became a little bit more interesting.
He became way more interesting in this moment because this guy is the guy that he's watching over the guy that had been possessed by the Predator. And he mentions something about his family and that he was ripped away from his family. And he mentions that Lar Flees isn't even his true name. And Lar Flees goes apeshit and tells him to shut up and he won't utter his name and he makes a big hammer thing like he's going to kill the guy right before, you know, Hal shows up and stops him.
He stole his privacy.
Whoa. So you're like, so yeah. So there's obviously something else going on.
I love when we get to the point where Larfleet wants to own indiscriminate concepts as well.
Yes.
That's the extent this character... Oh, damn.
Maybe he needs to be the new core, but...
Yeah, we definitely need...
Maybe he needs to be the Larfleet's core.
Yes, the Orange Lantern core.
I think they know... They know they have a popular character with Larfleet's. Giving him that Christmas special, but at the same time, I think they have to be very careful not to go too far with the character.
Yeah, I think he's making a lot more headway being in this series and sort of being
character. Yeah.
Yeah, a supporting character, sort of a foil to Hal, rather than actually trying to hold
his
own.
Not that there isn't enough substance to the character to do to that he couldn't support more than a one shot or anything. But you have to be careful and do these things in moderation. Otherwise, people get sick of it much quicker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But St. Walker shows up because Arda has revealed itself through this child. And actually makes even a further prophecy to Larfleet, which is that his family, his parents are still alive. So apparently, and they miss him. So okay, so could be more for that.
I just went, aww.
Yeah, like oh, well that would be.
It's like there's something that's maybe slightly human inside that thing after all.
Yep. And then apparently Hal does have hope. Who knew?
Who knew? But, oh look, blue costume. Story over.
Yep. Except the Flash shows up.
Yeah, there's the Flash as well. Well, why not?
Yeah. So.
I guess we've got to pile some interesting characters into this book. Hal Jordan's sucking up so much of the interest, you know?
Yeah, really. But hey, apparently Blackhand returns in the next issue, so.
Yeah.
He's been hanging out with the Indigo Tribe, and I don't know what the hell he's been doing.
He's been drinking the Kool-Aid.
Probably.
Yeah.
He was mumbling nonsense last time we saw him. Yes. Knock, knock. I really like that these comics are all picking up right from where the other one left off, so that's a good time. So we spend half of this... Green Lantern and Emerald Warriors, issue number 3. Still $4.
Not for much.
So
is this book any good yet?
It is, actually. It got really interesting this issue. They spend part of the issue fighting the Red Lantern succubus chick... who's apparently trying to explain that Guy cannot have his Red Lantern infection, if you will, removed by Bebar, as he calls him. I can't remember what that guy's name, so we will just call him Bebar. He's the elephant Blue Lantern. and they even mention, like, well, can't... So he basically uses his Blue Lantern power to clean up her speech, which is kind of funny. And she explains that he's going to have his, both red and green power in order to fight what's ahead. We break to a scene... Sorry?
Christmas powers.
Yes, Christmas powers unite, because we are getting close to that as well.
Well, red and green was all I was...
Well, that too.
Right, moving up.
Yes.
That didn't work.
Okay. It was okay. We'll go with that. so we wake up... With in the Daxam with Saddam Yat, and apparently there's a group of kids that are borrowing his Green Lantern powers. I don't understand why they can fly with him. But anyway, they explain basically what's been going on since he's been passed out. Remember that Saddam Yat, and we kind of explained this a couple weeks ago, but Saddam Yat had thrown himself into the Daxam sun in order to superpower the populace so that they could fight... Mongol. And then they just spent their time flying around and being super powered until
jerks.
Yeah. Until I guess this little thing pulled him out of the sun and took Ion and threw Saddam back to the planet and he got his ring back. Then our little guardian weird friend thing shows up and talks to the three-eyed guy, who I also don't know his name or care. He's the guy with all the psychics in the pool, who's apparently manipulating people into becoming Green Lanterns, which sounds kind of awesome. He's using this massive psychic, basically communicator that he's built to interject willpower into certain people and making them prime candidates to become Green Lanterns to then use them in whatever plot that he's planning. And he apparently has tons of clones of the psychics that he's got in his pool so he can keep it nice and charged up because it's killing some of them. So, anyway, don't know what's going on with that, but that's just the side story. The cool stuff happens at the very, very end of this issue when the three Green Lanterns and the Red Lantern decide that they have to further go into the Uncharted sector because not only, they're not really... Guy explains that he's like, okay, yeah, we were going there to explore, but there's something wrong with the rings. Normally when the rings are in range of a Blue Lantern, they become supercharged, but their power levels are staying at 99%, which means something is drawing the power off of their rings. And Guy explains that they've got to go into the unknown sector because that seems to be where the power draw is coming from, or that's where the problem is. So, of course, they were kind of pissed that they weren't told about that, but whatever. So Guy explains the next stop is going to be Daxam, because that's the whole reason that the one chick came along. And he has a sort of whispered conversation with the Red Lantern. And he asks her if she's going to be, you know, basically that she had promised that she was going to be on good behavior or something because of the pact that he has with Atrocitus. And she asks basically if he's going to keep his word, because we'd been wondering what this part of this pact had been with Atrocitus. And apparently what part of it is that they had traced the power drain to Saddam Yat. And Guy had sworn that if they found out it was him, that he would kill him.
Rapidly losing interest.
Anyway, so all of that for that reveal. So that could be sort of interesting, maybe. So, yeah. Anyway.
Why isn't this in the Green Lantern core book? I mean, why do we need an extra book for this?
Because core...
Make bank.
Has core even okay. been... What's been going on in Core? Have I been missing it? I thought I was subscribed to that, but I haven't even seen it.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in it either.
I haven't even gotten an issue of it.
It was Cyborg Superman, the last thing, right?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the story they were doing with that. Cool. So, yeah. So we should be due for another issue of that. Well, and that's the thing, though, is I think they're trying to break out the main Green Lantern. So I imagine that Emerald Warriors is going to be Guy's story, that Core is going to be for
Kyle,
thank you. I don't care for Kyle. Brian does. And
yeah, Kyle was Brian's Green Lantern.
I know.
Kyle was pretty awesome back in the day. They're not doing anything with him now.
Yeah. And then, of course, regular Green Lantern will be for Hal. So, yeah, they're not doing much, I guess, with him. So... okay, and that's everything, thankfully, that I read, except for the final book that we're going to get to, which is Return of Bruce Wayne. Someone that's read R.I.P., please help me with this, and I'll let y'all go, and I'll fill in bits, because I don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, I don't have it here in front of me, but this one kicks off. This is the second to last issue of this, and the cover made it sort of seem... that the era that Bruce was winding up in this time, after cavemen, pirates, pilgrims, and cowboys, was the 1930s pulp detective noir era, when in actuality, well, he sort of is, but he hasn't wound up in that time period. He's wound up about 20, 30... How old is Batman? Subtract the age he was when he was a child. Years past.
It's shortly after his parents' murder.
Shortly after.
That's easier to say.
Yes. And he is hired on by who is this woman again?
Well,
she's like an actress or something. She
yeah, but she's just a friend of his mum's, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hired on by her to solve the mystery. Because this is going back to some of the stuff that Morrison put forward in RIP, which is the rather outrageous claims that Thomas Wayne did not die in that shooting, and that was a stand-in, and that Thomas Wayne actually orchestrated the thing to get to have his wife killed. This woman is the wife of the actor from the movie The Black Glove, who these claims also suggested indulged in a bit of the old wife swapping with the Waynes and Alfred. Alfred denied it all, of course, and frankly, I mean, at the time, fans were getting so steamed about these things, and I was like, I couldn't believe that this was real. The whole point of the story was that this was defamation the Black Glove was putting out to assault Batman in both his civilian identity and mentally as well as physically on the Batman level. So I'm really surprised to see that Morrison has gone back to it and is now maybe suggesting that it could have been after all. I still can't believe he'll go through with it though.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, that seems to be the indication.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really, they go to Martha Wayne's parents and talk to them as well, and they believe that that's what's happened too. Mind you, Martha's mum seems suspect.
Now, have we gotten any, during this whole Return of Bruce Wayne thing, have we gotten any indication that he's actually traveling through, like real events, or maybe these are just events created just for Bruce to travel through?
No, I would say that there isn't a very strong indication in this issue that he is traveling through time.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, all of these traces have been left and that have been, and of course, you know, Superman and Green Lantern and Booster and Ripper traveling through time and finding the trails. So mm-hmm. He does seem to have been really traveling in time to do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't get the thing with the wasps, though. What the hell is wrong with that guy?
I don't know.
I think it's
another one of those weird Morrison things.
Yeah. This whole issue is crazy, Grant Morrison stuff.
Bitch, your husband's getting stung. Swat them away.
Yeah. Well, okay, so kind of moving on in the story, though. There's a side moment here where I'm assuming that's supposed to be Thomas Wayne in the sequence where he's talking to the scientist.
Yeah, I think so, isn't it?
Okay.
That's what I got from it.
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me, so I can't say.
I think that's supposed to be the indication.
Yeah, because he's just thinking about what happened with Roderick Kane. When Roderick Kane chose not to play. Yeah, it kind of makes me... Yeah, I think it's him.
Now, I don't know. So, okay, I'm going to throw something out here. So, this character's introduced, Carter Nicholas.
We met this guy before. This is the brain damage guy, yeah? Carter Nichols?
Carter Nichols, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he appeared in Batman 700.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the scientist, the former scientist. They talk about how he did time
travel.
Oh, so he's a scientist. Yeah, okay, now I understand.
He's a scientist who appeared in Batman 700, which was a rather good story set through the different eras of Batman linked together by this time travel experiment that this doctor was carrying out. I think Carter Nichols was a real character from the Golden Age, too.
Yeah, but got to think about that name, Carter Nichols.
What about it?
Carter, as in Michael Carter, as in like who's Carter? The mysterious person that's been wearing the supernova costume? I'm wondering if this character is going to be link between...
No, I don't know. He first appeared in Batman number 24, August 1944, so
yeah,
it's really
but
just...
How long has Rip been around, though? I'm just saying, I think there's a good possibility they could link that together.
Morrison isn't doing enough. Rip first appeared in 1959. Morrison isn't doing anything with Rip. I don't think I just certainly not doing anything with Booster. That's just something that's going on over in Booster's comic. I don't think Morrison doing anything with that.
I don't know.
I mean, basically the thing with Nichols was he went back in time and shot himself in the head so he would never invent the machine that caused all the trouble in the first place, if I remember the story right.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but the Carters are a long family of time travelers. Had to start.
But he was in Batman 700, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I'm making sure I'm not confusing him with somebody else, but I was pretty sure.
Well, there was a guy, you know, in
yeah, he was a guy.
They did time travel. I just can't remember his name.
No, yeah, okay, I'm right. Yeah, that's cool. I'm right.
So it is him?
That. Yeah, it is him. Okay. I'm going crazy. Okay.
So what's going on with this guy in the wheelchair? He says, Batman, beware the hole in things. Is somebody sending him a message?
That's Nichols, isn't it?
The guy that's sitting in the wheelchair?
Yeah.
No, I mean, like...
I'm not talking about the guy in the wheelchair. I'm talking about the...
Yeah, I'm talking about... We were talking about the guy that's the doctor, you know, the
yeah. The guy that has a shirt, the smiley face t-shirt on.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. So yeah. The guy in the wheelchair is the guy you're talking about, right?
No, I'm talking about the guy with the t-shirt.
I don't have the issue in front of me. I'm sorry. I may be confusing things by that fact. But upon my cursory reading of the issue, I thought that the guy in the wheelchair was supposed to be Ian Nichols.
No, okay. It's supposed to be the guy with the glasses and the...
I thought that was...
Because he's this... No.
Okay. See, just like in Grant Morrison fashion, we don't know what in the hell is going on.
Right. But it's the same guy at the end. It's the same guy at the end that apparently sends Booster... Apparently, or not Booster, Batman into the future? Well, apparently, there's story-wise...
He's
there's
got a box, is what he's got, and Batman takes it and uses it, right?
Yeah. And there's a bit of a double-cross, of course, that happens. It turns out that the actress chick is actually working for...
The Black Hand,
and yeah,
which again suggests the defamation. It could be real defamation if she's the one trying to propagate it,
right? So we don't know. We don't know.
That's just the tagline for the cover of the next issue.
We don't know. But apparently,
it ends with we don't know. What is this? A robot Bruce Wayne? I'm not sure what I'm looking at.
It's a futuristic looking Bruce Wayne. It's sort of a hybrid of that version of the archivist that we saw at Vanishing Point and Bruce himself. So it would appear to be that this is a future... This is Bruce coming back from the future, because my indication would be that whatever device that was used in this issue, wherever he went, was actually into the future.
So you think Bruce went into the future and this thing is moved back into the present?
Yeah, and now the thing that's arrived is future Bruce... in the present.
Okay.
Bruce that was in the future.
Yeah.
That would be my indication. But, and that's why I'm saying, like, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me to link that character back into... I'm going to hold on to the Carter thing and say that that may end up being linked back, but...
And what's awesome is there's a line in it, and I'm looking at this, you know, I was trying to find it, but isn't there, like, a line where, like, Bruce is, like... talking about reading his because he has his book with him that, you know, has all of the his adventures through time kind of you know, jotted down in it. What he, you know, whenever he remembers to write it in, I guess, because whenever he arrives in a new time, he forgets everything.
Right.
Well, doesn't he like make a comment? It's like, you know, finally, you know, it seems like the story is starting to make more sense or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's like something. I can't remember where it was at.
Yeah, I seem to recall that, but I don't know where that was. It's not necessarily making more sense. So,
there's one issue left. Do we think that last issue will make sense of this entire story?
I'm hoping so.
I don't think it will, though, because from past experience of reading Grant Morrison comics...
Well...
I think we're going to be left even more confused than we were before... And we'll scratch our heads, and then we'll just have to say, well, you know, it was probably over our heads, and we don't have, like, Grant Morrison's intellect to figure it out.
Right.
But ultimately, like, this story has been moving through as fanciful as some of the ideas and the dialogues have been. I mean, it's been followable, and the ideas behind it have been quite straightforward and understandable ones.
And,
but, I mean, I can't believe... Well, it's not that I can't believe it, but I would like to believe it would only make sense to me that that this should be the fork that gets stuck in the whole mystery of the Wayans thing and all the stuff he's been weaving through, the whole Black Glove thing. It just feels like this should be it. The question is whether or not it will be.
Yeah. Well, and now the concept with the problem with what's going on with Bruce, right, is that as he's moving forward in time, he's building up Omega energy, correct?
Yeah. He's going to do something bad when he winds up in the present.
That's the slightly more nebulous concept, I think, that is in play right here, which is like, how, why, and why? How does that work exactly?
Yeah. But it's whatever, yeah, whatever it is. Well, there was some comment that I guess typically when people get sent to the past that they usually end up just dying there. And Bruce is somehow finding a way to keep moving forward, and that was Darkseid's intent, was that he knew Bruce would move forward through time and build up Omega energy to destroy everything.
Okay, I found the part I was talking about. There's a page where they're visiting the doctor. And the actress asks Bruce about the book, and says, "What is that?" And he says, "It's a story close to my heart, you could say. The plot's got a few holes, but I think it's starting to make sense." Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But a couple of things I do want to, before we close this out, I do want to say that there's a couple of things that I like. Did they use a different paper on this? Because it has a very even retro feel to it. I don't know if that's even intentional or not, if the last issue was like that, but I don't know. Even just from the paper, it feels different. But it does have that definite noir sense to it. I mean, there's a lot of the lines and the even some of the, I don't know, the art feels that way even to me. But the dialogue, it's, I don't know. It definitely put me in that mode.
Yeah.
Where it's like I felt like I was watching a classic film or something, so.
Yeah, I really like the art in this issue. I mean, there hasn't been an issue of Return of Bruce Wayne where I haven't loved the art. I mean, he's gotten some great artists to work on this. It's, if anything, I think this would be like a really good book to get in a trade just to see the different art and just to see all the different creators that Grant Morrison got to work into this story. I think that would be really cool to have. But yeah, it looks like Ryan Suk? Is that how you say it? Suk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He says, Penciler Ryan Suk, Perez, art on pages 22 through 31. Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Neither do I.
But it looks good, though. I like it, and they did a good job with
it. But just, and that's why I say it's like, not to knock like the story stuff they were trying to get along, but just reading through it, I felt it was sort of immersive in that sense. I felt in this sort of nondescript time period that they were trying to create. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's sort of, you always get into a weird piece in comics, though, when it's like Batman's history, his origin, happens at a specific contextual feeling time, which is sort of nondescript 1930s. But obviously, chronologically, that can't be the case. If Bruce is going to be in his 30s, you know what I mean? In the 2000s, then it would have had to have been the 70s. So, yeah. You know, it's sort of just a nondescript time
period. Well, you know, Gotham's a funny city.
It is. Yeah. It's sort of backwards.
I think the irony of that, though, is that this is the one where they fudge the time period a bit, but then it's the one that probably succeeds in capturing an era much more than any of the others did. Because, I mean, the other issues, barring little bits here and there, were basically, you know, Elseworlds Batman as a caveman.
Yes.
Elseworlds Batman. Particularly, I think, the Puritan issue.
Yeah.
The Pilgrims issue. That was really like, oh, he hunts witches. He's a witch finder. You know, but this one was really part of something bigger, and it wasn't just what if Batman was a detective in the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. All right. So, hi, XV. How you been?
I think he's gone.
Why? Oh, don't you love doing this show? It's your favorite.
Go to hell.
Thank you.
Harsh.
Working on that. Okay, so
later.
Let's talk. I told you it was going to be a huge issue.
And look, there went McFeely.
God. No, he'll be back. See, there he is. So
very misbehaved.
Yeah, that's not good. Hey, you lasted for a long time on there.
Yeah, that was okay.
To try to edit that. Anyway, so Earth's Mightiest Heroes Avenger. No, I'm sorry, that's not what we're talking about.
That's next week, dude.
Okay.
Next week.
So, XV.
The mini episodes were pretty good, I'll say that. Well, that's a little teaser for next week.
Those did hit. Okay.
Yeah.
So, XV. Iron Man? Anime?
Yeah. It's Iron Man as an anime. It works.
You might have heard about this.
What, McFeely?
You might have heard about this, the audience. Because they've been talking about it for a while. There was a trailer for this. God, it must have been last year the trailer for this came out, and a trailer for Wolverine as well.
It was like last year at Comic-Con, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
It's part of a four series thing called Marvel Anime, and they're doing one of Wolverine, and they're doing one of Blade, fourth one unknown, and the first one out of the gate is Iron Man. It's a 12 episode miniseries, and it's anime version of Iron Man, but. First of all, it's written by Warren Ellis. I don't know if the script is written by Warren Ellis, but the story is, the overarching story is. And the important thing that I think needs to be pointed out about it is that it is not some Japanese version of Iron Man. It's not like the Tokusatsu Spider-Man or any of the mangas.
Right, this follows the movie continuity, more or less.
It's certainly inspired by it. But this is about the American man, Tony Stark, who is Tony Stark, we all know, coming to Japan to do what Tony Stark does.
Not that a Metal Heroes inspired Tony Stark with a giant robot wouldn't be awesome in its own way.
But... oh, God, yes. I would totally watch that.
First off, and this is something my friend RAC pointed out to me and I agree with, Japanese dialogue, like the way they speak, does not suit the movie style Tony Stark at all.
Yeah, there's no making it work, is there? You can't see if this gets dubbed, you can't see Robert Downey Jr. doing the dubbing, can you?
No, I mean, if they want to keep it true to what this Iron Man's trying to be, they'd have to go pretty loose with at least some of the translation.
Yeah.
The
Japanese script is trying its hardest, but it's just the very nature of the language.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we got out of it, too. There's just no way to have Tony Stark talk like Tony Stark in normal Japanese conversation.
I have had a few chuckles out of it, though, where he said things that I have thought were very American things that I wouldn't have expected to hear out of another anime. So, I mean, one always raises an eyebrow and is always a little bit when anyone hears about letting an anime or a manga do an interpretation of a character, but I think they've done a pretty good job of one of the themes that's two episodes of this have aired, by the way, folks. Well, three.
Actually, three episodes have aired. We've only been able to watch
three. Haven't been out for subs yet, but one of the themes that's been at the core of these first two episodes is that Tony Stark's a cocky bastard, and Japan don't cotton to that, son.
Right. They've been making a big deal out of Japan not trusting Tony Stark because
cultural concepts working their way in here because it is very much an American in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, there's some intelligence to the way they're writing the situation at the very least.
They could just have him be over there and make no remark on it and it have nothing to do with it, but the idea behind it is definitely solid. Yeah. The idea behind this, by the way, again, for the listeners, is that he's here to open a new arc reactor power plant in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And is considering retiring as Iron Man and has produced a production model armor that's going to be given to specially trained military agents to be able to take his place fighting crime. Unfortunately, he's become targeted. And another thing is part of this whole thing. He's not fighting made-up villains. I really expected him to just fight some new guy, but he's fighting the Zodiac.
I wish it was Unicorn or Killer Shrike.
Yeah, well, he's fighting it is a new version of the Zodiac. It is a pretty Japanese inspired version of the Zodiac. They're all kind of like a mecha armor wearing types.
Are they armor wearing or are they robots? I can't tell.
Yeah, I grant you, I can't tell. I just sort of assumed they were probably wearing armor because...
See, I kind of assumed the opposite because he's just kind of like indiscriminately blowing them up every episode.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, I assumed people because just like historically, the Zodiac is people. That's the only reason.
But if it was people, I would assume that he would at least try to rip the pilot out before he blows up the suit. I mean,
again, this is an anime.
Yes, well, I'll agree with that. And being anime, there's lots of different anime art styles, and I don't really like this one very much.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I haven't seen it, so I didn't know what the animation looked like, if it was awesome.
I can't complain about it. I don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something about the character designs that's not really... kind of repulsing me. I can't really think of anything to compare it to, but just not catching me very well.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say I was being repulsed by it, but I don't have any particular objections to it. The designs for the Zodiac are massively uninspired. For all you ever even get to see of them, like,
right. I mean,
they aren't deliberately obscuring them in shadow or anything. They're just flung around the screen. And the CGI animation is despicable.
Yeah, that was another thing I was going to bring up too, especially in episode 2, where you see more of Iron Man like walking around.
It's very jerky.
The frame rate is so visibly different from the surrounding 2D animation.
It's like stop motion.
It kind of reminds me of Transformers Energon without the heavy cell shading.
Ooh, I gotta be honest, this stuff is moving. This stuff isn't moving as good as the Energon stuff moved.
Wow. That says a lot.
Like, the visuals and the shading and the designs of it generally are more pleasing to the eye, but it's
this
so
be really pretty
jerky.
Completely
the
still.
Frame rate is killing it.
Right. It looks like, remember playing like PlayStation games and you'd get into a spot where the camera couldn't quite get around you and it's just kind of jiggling? It's kind of like that. But, you know, like...
Yeah, I'm not massively surprised because it just seems like the animes can't do CGI.
Well, Japan in general seems to have a problem with CGI except for a few select cases.
I mean, it makes me wonder if the CG was their idea, or if perhaps somebody further up the chain thought it would be a fun idea.
Well, yeah, I don't get why they integrate CG. I mean, like, if they can make the animation work really well, why do they need the CG?
What I'm thinking is that the CG, in at least one way, helped, because it can make it easier to keep the appearance of Iron Man and the armored monster things more consistent from, you know, shot to shot, but... they're losing a whole lot in the actual execution of it. I mean, that's just my theory on it, though.
That's just on the animation. Mm. I mean, I've been fairly entertained by the stories of the episode so far. I wasn't too sure about the first one, because I didn't know the Zodiac was going to be in it, but then Scorpio came stomping in and, well, completely went out like a yacht, frankly, in the last 30 seconds of the first episode. But I was like, oh, hey, brilliant. Look, the Zodiac. I know now that they're approaching this from a better angle. And then the second episode is about... the first episode is literally about Tony arriving in Japan. And the Zodiac... the Dio armor, the production model Iron Man armor, goes out of control. We don't really know why. And it's missing. It is currently missing. And the second episode is about Tony taking the law into his own hands in the streets.
Yeah, actually, episode 2 is very Tony Stark in many ways. Like him firing off guided missiles from his car.
He had a bit of a Batmobile in this episode.
Sounds like James Bond.
Wow. It is very Bondy, yeah. The plutonium needed to to start the reactor is stolen and gets mixed up in one of those very hilarious stock plots where two identical cases, one held by a completely unassuming character and one held by the villains, accidentally get mixed up when they bump into each other in the street.
In this case, the completely unassuming character is the Japanese reporter that Tony Stark is trying to get in pants of.
Yes, as you might expect. She's one of the supporting characters for the season. Yeah. Her name is...
Nanami,
yes.
In episode 2, Masked Rider shows up to yell at Tony for firing the missiles down the street.
What?
Well, he had a mask on and he was on a motorcycle.
Yes.
He seems to work for the Japanese government.
I think they said his name was Sakurai.
Yeah, something like that. Well, he seems to be a special operative for the government or some such, and they have some, seems like they have some kind of tech or armor program of their own in the works. So I think we could be seeing a little bit of the very traditional two heroes have to have a disagreement and spend, they'll be rivals who probably spend the bulk of the series at each other's throats before teaming up to take down the leader of the Zodiac.
That's what the opening sequence is kind of implying anyway.
Yes.
So it's like a deal where you hear like a whistling sound and then like the guy shows up and... No? Okay.
Not yet, but maybe next episode.
Okay.
Maybe he'll throw roses or something, you know.
Proto-Man, it's you.
No, actually, I mean, they've done a fairly good job thus far of avoiding any cliches of that nature. Because it is a story about an American in Japan, and it's compared with the trailer for Wolverine, which does look like some gay ass version of Wolverine. Oh, you've seen the trailer. Come on.
I need to see it.
I haven't seen this.
Oh, I saw the Iron Man trailer, but never saw
it. Lanky little. I don't know what.
Wow. You know, it's Wolverine and it's anime, and even separately, those two are not my favorite things by themselves anymore. And when you put them together, it's just like, you know, anti-interest.
Yes, I'm not particularly interested in this one, but Iron Man has won major points with me out of the gate by actually being about the American comic book character Tony Stark going to Japan. And the thing about Wolverine is, I mean, the character has a history in Japan, so they don't need to dick with it, but that trailer really looks like they're dicking with it. But that's the future. That's not what we're talking about now. Iron Man, I have felt, is off to a pretty good start and has a good idea behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I plan to keep up with the Iron Man series because I at least want to see the mass production armor come back. That's something they need to toy with a little bit more than they do, I think.
Well, I'm not entirely convinced of that particular plot point. I don't know what version of Tony Stark is talking about retiring and giving the armor to somebody else to use.
Yeah, movie inspired, but not really following what he was.
No, that's more. I'm sure he's done that. He has done that in the comic more than once. But that doesn't really scream movie. While everything else about it does, because it's all about arc reactors and stuff. And I'm not sure if it's supposed to be like happening between the two movies or not. Because like he has the round chest arc, but the production model armor has the triangular chest arc. So
I'm kind of seeing it in a way, kind of the same as Batman the Animated Series, where it's taking cues from style of the movie, but you know, using it in its own way.
Yeah, springboard
not
for
really connected.
For a new thing.
I'd prefer to take it.
I wonder
it
if
that
any
way.
Of our listeners have actually watched this show.
Or probably care. Not.
But in the U.S. at least, I think Spike TV, or the G4.
G4, I believe.
Is G4 getting it?
Yeah.
The Iron Man and the Wolverine anime, they're going to get dubbed at some point in the future. I don't really know when.
I believe it's set for next year.
Great.
Well, watch it. Check it out
at
least.
We have to pan for.
No,
yeah, because that was going to be my question, because I was like, well, at least we don't have to worry about this ever really making it to the States.
This is something that Marvel has been very hands-on with and has promoted pretty heavily at conventions. This is not some curious little Japanese side product like the Tokusatsu Spidey or stuff. This is going to go global.
Isn't it kind of weird, though, that it wouldn't be winding up, like, on a Disney channel since all this animation stuff's going to Disney now anyway? Is it, like, really violent, maybe, or really...
It's for kids.
It's a little bit beyond, like, Iron Man Armored Adventures.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's as much... I mean, as far as, like, violence or sexuality goes, it's on the same level as the films, so... Mm-hmm. Judge from that what you will. I mean, they wouldn't show the Iron Man movie on Jetix, you know?
Right.
Does Jetix still exist?
They are showing Planet Hulk on Disney XD.
Oh, it was severely edited, though, when I watched it.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that.
Oh, God, yeah, I watched it. I was like, why is this on Disney XD? And then I watched it, and, like, when people would die and stuff, it would just completely delete the scene. You wouldn't even see the scene.
The baby who exploded into flame and crumbled away as ash.
You don't see it. You don't see it. She's holding the baby, and then they drop the bomb, and then there's just no reference.
No.
It's like it skips the scene, and they're in the courtroom at the end or something.
Wow.
Like that. Yeah, it was terrible.
Well,
yeah,
I believe it's not like anybody couldn't have seen that was a bad plan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Tony makes a bunch of comments about women and stuff, and the I think the general idea of the cultural differences, that's probably my favorite aspect of the whole thing, to be honest. Is probably liable to go over the head of any young kid that would be watching it, so. Yeah.
So, check it out, when I guess, when it comes on, then.
Or download the subs.
You know.
That's probably illegal.
It's subtitled on the internet right now, so.
The subtitling group producing it is new, and they are called Forceworks.
I'm sure they organized just for this.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay, well, great.
Oh, yeah, that's something different for you for this week, folks. Try that.
Yeah.
Yes, we have the Avengers card. The Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon is out this coming Wednesday. Whether or not you'll be listening to this show before that airs, I don't know. But
yeah,
we'll be talking about
the web
first
episodes
episode.
Are out there now, right? You can watch 20, all of them now.
20 micro episodes out there right now.
Short.
Allegedly...
they're pretty cool. I liked them. I mean, I caught some of them when they were introducing them, but didn't really watch them in too much detail and was surprised to find that, you know, Disney XD was playing all of them, I guess, in order last night, kind of like a big Avengers movie. And
yeah.
They were pretty good. I liked them.
Yeah, I mean, it worked.
Yeah, I liked
it. Worked pretty well strung together like that.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
like, but we
pretty cool. Well independently, too.
Yeah. Cool. But I guess
right.
We don't need to get into it. We'll,
no,
we'll, get into next
we'll,
week.
We'll
yeah.
Talk all about that. Next week and stuff, so awesome. Well, there you go.
For comics out next week, and we'll have some more time to talk about other stuff.
Sure, you don't want to blow another 10 minutes and bring us up to a full 2.5 hours?
No. Yeah, because if you're still awake...
Which XV almost wasn't.
Yeah, I know. We had to, like, wake him up. Okay, but that's it. So that's the show. Again, listen at the end, because that's where you'll get all the information on... where to find us online. And I think this maybe go up before the contest or whatever, but there's a contest, but it may be too late for that. We'll see. Maybe I'll have it up today. I don't know. But anyway.
If you're listening to it, oh, we're not doing it live. I was going to say, if you're listening to it live, it's okay, but
no,
we're not.
Probably not. Okay.
Well, if we were doing it live, we would have lost the audience about 45 minutes ago.
I know. They would be yelling and screaming. But
up,
anyway.
Baby.
Okay.
How many of these people have to go to bed, Chris?
It's 10 to 12 over here.
Yeah. It's not that late. It's
yeah.
Only, what, a Monday?
Yeah.
What day is it?
It's Sunday night.
It is Sunday.
It's going to be Monday in 11 minutes.
So, there you go. Oh, God, we've got to go. Okay, so please tune in next week when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.